Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Before we get started, just one note. I am away from the home studio. Calling what I actually work in the home studio is kind of a joke in itself, but the point being, we're all on Zoom right now, myself and my guests, so apologies in advance. This won't sound as perfectly fine as some of these other podcasts do, but Patrick Antonetti is a very, very good producer, so he'll do his best to make this sound as good as possible. But I realize that the sound quality won't be like previous episodes, but we figured just given the topic, it was worth doing a quick emergency pod. Try to struggle through if you can with the not perfect sound. And then next week we'll be back to our, you know, either really good sound, or if you think the sound sucks usually, then it's back to the usual shitty podcast. Anyway, my guests this week, and I really appreciate them coming on, two very accomplished women in the business. Tabitha Davidson is a sports and cultural writer for The Athletic and the host of the Cultural Calculus podcast. Jane McManus is the director of Marist's Center for Sports Communication and a Deadspin sports columnist. For these purposes, it's very important. Both Tabitha and Jane worked at ESPN for a number of years and obviously have firsthand experience of what it's like to work there. And this will be particularly important for the topic that we're discussing. Solo topic on this one, and that's the New York Times piece on the storm at ESPN over Rachel Nichols' comments about Maria Taylor. And I am incredibly pleased to be joined by both Tabitha and Jane. Tabitha and Jane, thank you for making the time today on, post-holiday. I appreciate you guys coming on.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, right. Thanks for having us. Good to talk to you again, Jane.
Absolutely. This will be good. I'm glad. I want to hear what you have to say about this, Tabitha. I was really glad that you were going to be on.
All right, before we start, this podcast is going to be about Jane and Tabitha. I'm going to really do my best to just stay out of the way and listen outside of offering some thoughts about ESPN's, once again, historically bad management in this situation. Workplace policies and practices and culture have obviously benefited me as a white male in the sports media. So I'm really just going to sit back and listen, just like I hope the rest of the audience, and hopefully we'll sort of get some interesting insight from these guys and maybe learn something. All right. I'm going to start with you, Tabitha. Let me just sort of give just a quick background of this. As we're taping this on Sunday, the New York Times published a story headlined "A Disparaging Video Prompts Explosive Fallout Within ESPN." The subhead of that was, in comments still rippling through the network, the reporter Rachel Nichols, who is white, said Maria Taylor, who is black, earned the job to host the 2020 NBA Finals coverage because ESPN was, in quotes, feeling pressure on diversity. Let's start with an overview here. How did you view the story when you read it?
I had a couple of perhaps conflicting reactions. I think my first one was, Rachel kind of said the quiet part out loud. I think a lot of us who are women or people of color or, you know, minorities in this industry know that some of our colleagues and definitely some of our readers and viewers assume that we got our jobs because of some kind of affirmative action call. Now, we should also stress that a commitment to diversity and what you might deem as being affirmative action in no way means that a person isn't qualified for that job, right? And frankly, ESPN should have more of a commitment to diversity. So if that was part of this decision making, then I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. The other reaction I had, and I know Jane can speak to this, is that the dynamics of this industry and, you know, as you mentioned, in particular, ESPN management ends up pitting women against other women for jobs that shouldn't be as limited as they are. And I think that that's a really unfortunate reality that it's hard for us to find allies and it's hard for us to find camaraderie when the industry is as cutthroat as it is and when it seems like there are finite opportunities for us.
Jane?
Yeah, that's a great point. I feel like I'm really able to recognize what I think are the sexist elements of this story. And, you know, as a white woman in this industry, I feel like, you know, I try my best to be an ally. I realize that I do not come to that perspective naturally. So I have to do a lot of listening to people that I respect. And so kind of one of the first reactions was I wanted to kind of hear from, and I, you know, I took to Twitter to kind of see what some women that I respect and listen to on these issues were saying. And Nefertiti Walker, who's a professor at UMass Amherst, started a thread about, you know, how every job that she's gotten in academia, starting with adjunct professor, she's had white colleagues say to her that she's the diversity hire, that she got her job because of, you know, because the universities have a crappy track record, just like ESPN, on diversity, and that they're trying to improve it. And so she's the result of that. And of course, what it does is it makes her feel unqualified. It makes her feel like her talents and her expertise are overlooked, that she is simply checking a box, that she is not being seen as a whole person. She is just being seen as her identity. And I think that's what's so pernicious here, is that even as Rachel, as a white woman, I think was able to recognize and talks about in the tape, she recognizes that these elements are at play above her at the management level. She is playing into it by not recognizing Maria Taylor as a full talented person who is qualified for these jobs that she's being discussed for and should get a shot at these jobs because she presents that kind of a talent. And then the other thing I think is that even though she recognizes the dynamics at play, she plays into them because the person that she's talking to is Adam Mendelsohn, who is LeBron James's longtime personal advisor. And so what she's doing is she's reinforcing her place in those power structures, a place that Maria Taylor should have access to because she's going to need, if she's going to advance, to be able to have conversations with that person without knowing that these are secondary conversations after it's been established that she is there because of her race and not because of her talent. So that unfortunately is part of the problem. But like Kavitha, I also recognized in the conversation that what was happening was very much the political game that one is forced to play at ESPN. And, you know, it shouldn't be that Rachel Nichols has to scheme for her job. It shouldn't be that Maria Taylor has to scheme for her job. It shouldn't be that they're pitted against one another. The decision about who's going to host what should have been made a level above them a long time ago. It shouldn't be up to them individually to try to convince people about this or that. And I think ultimately, you know, I just heard the language of people who are very used to having to position themselves in one way or another. And I also know that that was not what I was good at. and you know, part of the reason I don't, you know, I kind of was thinking about it. I was like, wow, if I'd done that more, would I still be there? I mean, not that I'm very happy where I am. And I really enjoy the role that I play now and wouldn't want to be back in that because I unfortunately think it's not just about how good you are at your job, how much you know about the industry, whether what kind of interviewing skills you have or what kind of a journalist you are. It's also about whether or not you're able to have those conversations and play that game. And that's a very difficult part of the job.
Kavitha, Jane sort of just hit on this, but I would like to sort of ask you this directly. I'm curious about the things women, people of color, women of color at ESPN find most challenging day to day, like things that I might not notice. I wonder if you'd feel comfortable sharing just some of what you encountered when you were there.
Sure. I mean, I think I actually had a probably luckier experience. You know, I didn't do a ton of like front-facing camera work, even though I did some. And the teams and the people that I worked with, I was at ESPNW, and most of the TV I did was on Outside the Lines, you know, led by the great Bob Lee. Most of the teams that I interacted with directly treated me very well. But there definitely is, you know, whether you're talking about just the kinds of things that you're interested in, or, you know, whether like someone brings up Amy Schumer in a random conversation, and you kind of recognize that you're the only person of color in the room, and maybe we have a different opinion about her comedy than other colleagues might. You're definitely always aware of being of not being, you know, the majority in the room. And I will also say that, especially for someone like Maria, or, you know, you can go down the line, Jamel, Carrie, the like being on camera, being a front-facing media personality at a place like ESPN constantly opens you up to not only commentary on your race, but commentary on your appearance, which you can't really separate from the commentary on your race. And with Maria in particular, I remember, I think it was last fall or something, that some radio host was making a comment about what she was wearing. And you know, as Jane said, you're constantly aware that you're not seen as a whole person, that your race is, and your identity is in many ways, you know, has bearing on whether or not you got to that position, or whether, you know, you got your job based on that. But also as a woman, and as a woman of color, you're very aware that your appearance and how pretty you are, and, you know, how you look on camera makes all of that difference too. And that's a very common experience for women in this industry, not only, you know, wondering if we're qualified for the jobs we get because of some kind of call for diversity, but also, you know, just sheerly wondering whether, you know, I'm easy to look at on camera, and is that the only reason I've gotten this job? But yeah, I mean, I think that it's always difficult when you are, when you're one of the few in the room. And I think that these comments that we've heard from Rachel are things that a lot of us have suspected that some of our colleagues probably think of us. And I know, you know, for me, definitely, like, I've had readers just say flat out on Twitter, on my articles, you're only, like, you're the affirmative action hire, basically. And that's a really difficult thing to deal with. And the other thing that Jane brought up that I didn't realize when I was at ESPN, but now a couple of years removed, is absolutely the strategy of playing the game is so integral to success at that company. And I think if you're younger, or if you're not as seasoned, or if you just don't have the personality type to play that game, it can absolutely be very difficult to navigate some of those waters and to try and move up the ladder.
Yeah, I that's well said. I want to ask both of you guys to comment on something Jane wrote, but, and maybe this is the reality of all organizations, but in my sort of experience of reporting and writing about ESPN, so much of it, a lot of times, feels Game of Thrones-ish, in that if you have aligned yourself with the right family or the right leader at a certain time, your career can soar. Let's just be honest right now. Essentially, ESPN is Norby Williamson's ESPN. And so people sort of who are aligned with Norby Williamson, or people who Norby Williamson likes, maybe that's a better way to phrase it, are in a good position. You know, once upon a time, it was John Skipper's ESPN or Connor Schell's ESPN. So I have found that a lot of times that, and maybe again, this is true of all businesses, where the relationship between you and someone with juice often matters more than your own talents, than your sort of your own merits. But let me get to something Jane wrote, which struck on Twitter, which kind of struck me. And she wrote about Carrie Champion, Michael Smith, and Jemele Hill, and she said all three are thriving outside of ESPN. And here was the point that I thought was really interesting. She said, "But all spoke honestly about race when it served the network, and after found their career trajectories there diminished. Having been at ESPN, if I were Taylor, I'd be very aware of this, especially as it came time to sign a new contract. She had ESPN's back at a crucial time last summer, but it's a question of whether providing a real voice and reporting will be rewarded when the crisis passes." Jane, what were you thinking about when you tweeted that out?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I look around at the Black colleagues that I've had at ESPN who are some are still at the company and many are not. And, you know, many of them, you know, Jamel, Michael and Carrie, but then also, you know, Jacina Anderson or Jim Trotter or Mike Hill has did a video yesterday talking about some of his experience. And I think all of them felt like their willingness to speak out when the company needed to have a credible Black voice on cultural issues for different things that were being covered, whether it was Colin Kaepernick or George Floyd or anything like that, that they were willing to do that. And they used their credibility for the company. And then when it came time for that loyalty to be returned, or at least, or even that respect to be returned, that it really kind of wasn't. And, you know, and that the political winds had changed and that people had moved to a different issue. And so putting yourself out there, which I think it's in some ways kind of an unnatural, you know, I think, you know, or at least my experience, I can speak of my experience. I knew when I was talking about domestic violence and covering those issues that it was helpful for ESPN to have a woman in that position. And I also knew that it was going, I also suspected that it was going to damage my career overall, that I'd become defined by that issue and that it would be difficult for me to move on. And I very much tried to cover other things and continue to do the work on domestic violence. But I found that once ESPN decided it wasn't so interested in covering that anymore, that that affected my trajectory. And I think, so I'm extrapolating a bit, but given the conversations that I've had with Carrie and Michael and Jamel and Jacina, and others there, I get the sense that that there's a similar feeling that that ESPN doesn't that again, it maybe it's the, you know, the next, it becomes somebody else's ESPN, right? And that the new prevailing ethos is not interested in elevating those voices anymore. But nobody ever tells you when you're at ESPN. They all tell you you're doing a great job. And I kind of think that we can see this a bit with Maria Taylor and Rachel Nichols. And I imagine that both of them have people who are telling them that they're going to be the host or that they deserve this position or that, you know, something is coming for them and all they have to do is X, Y, and Z. Or otherwise, why would someone feel like they're entitled to a position? And I do think that's where people kind of get pitted against one another is this idea of you don't know everything that's happening is happening behind closed doors that you don't have access to. And so it's very difficult to know where you stand or where you're going to stand in 6 months, even though you get the sense very much that people are already making those decisions.
It's a really good point. And Kavitha, I want you to just respond to Jane. But again, the one thing that I've always noted when it comes to ESPN, and I think this is probably true of other sports networks, is on-air talents who have direct communication or direct paths to the decision makers in that company have longer, more fruitful, bigger contracts. A lot of times those lines can be direct, where the talent, on-air talent has a direct relationship with, the president, or they have a very powerful agent who has a direct relationship with, you know, the inner leaders of ESPN, and that's how they almost manage up, that, you know, they sort of do a really good job of managing above them. And I know, I respect where Jane's coming from, because if you're just sort of even a well-paid on-air talent who just doesn't have those lines of communications, you're almost sort of playing in a different world than those other people. But I did, I'm interested, Kavitha, what your thoughts are to what Jane just said.
Yeah. I mean, to your point about access and about those kinds of connections. I mean, I learned that after the fact, and that's, you know, one of those things where I remember very vividly when I first joined ESPN I was reached out to by an agent at CAA, and I didn't know anything about this world. I didn't know really what an agent did, whether it was necessary, whether it was worth the cost, all of that. And I asked one of my colleagues, who was a white woman, on her personality, at ESPN, no longer at the company. And she basically said that agents aren't necessary. You don't really need one. They're not worth the price, all of that. She had an agent, and I later found out she was negotiating her contract at the time. So there was a little bit of a conflict in the advice that she gave me, but it does make a huge difference to have that person in the room. Like when you work at ESPN, having an agent pays for itself just by having someone in the talent office for you. And nobody really tells you that when you get there. So I do think that, you know, that's a huge part of these conversations. Another thing, you know, to what Jane said is that ESPN is such a sprawling place and has such high level talent across the board that it can trot out, you know, a bunch of very respected Black voices when diversity matters and when they need to present this front of having this commitment to diversity. They do the same thing with high level women talent, especially when it comes to tennis coverage, for example. Rightfully so, ESPN is praised for having a lot of women who cover tennis and who cover other sports as well. But that doesn't, you know, it can't stop there. And I think that that's really what, what this kind of issue is coming down to. To Jane's point, you know, when you talk about Jamel and Carey and Michael Smith and, you know, going down the line, I think one of the things that we've seen is not just that, you know, some of these voices are brought out to present this front, but also that there just isn't institutional support or protectionism. When you know that you're bringing out, Black voices to talk about race or to talk about Colin Kaepernick or something like that, that there's going to be some kind of pushback, some kind of backlash from the public, and that they deserve to have some kind of institutional support. And I always think about when the Six, when Jamel and Michael debuted on SportsCenter, and the immediate reaction from viewers was, "Oh, this is Black SportsCenter," or this is just part of ESPN being the woke crowd or something like that. And I don't know. I didn't hear any kind of pushback from ESPN or any kind of commitment to what this show could have been or was supposed to be beyond that. And, I think that that's really where some of these failings lie.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
I want to ask you guys how you feel about, now again, understanding that we never would have gotten this conversation, which was illegally taped. So let's be clear on that. But Jane, I'll start with you. How do you feel about Rachel Nichols discussing things with Adam Mendelsohn, who reps some people she covers? I think as someone in your position, teaching journalism now, I think there's just value in your thoughts on this. The reality is, we all have relationships with people we cover, and sometimes those conversations do like go away from subject interviewer. But I think it's worth, at least for the couple people who really care about the inside of this, just to get a perspective from somebody who's teaching journalism right now, just how you saw that.
Yeah. I mean, I just to start, Rachel has been in this business a long time and she has relationships with people. But in that conversation, she is actually appealing to Mendelsohn, not as a source, but as an agent, almost like getting free advice from an agent, about her own situation. They're talking about her position at ESPN as it relates to her own job. They're not talking about, they're not talking about LeBron James or any of the players that she covers. She's not doing any reporting that's going to benefit her necessarily in terms of what she brings to the show, which is, I think, why you would call some as a journalist, why you would call somebody like that. And I do think that it kind of is, yes, there is a casualness when you have spoken to somebody for 20 years and they get to know you a little bit more and you get to know them a little bit more. But I think also that, you know, journalism has become much more of an access game than you and I, Richard, might be comfortable with, where it is very much about trading information. You know, Adam Mendelsohn, by knowing what the political chessboard looks like.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Adam Mendelsohn gets a lot of value out of knowing who the players are at ESPN, right? I mean, exactly. He's got major figures that he reps, and that's how he makes his living. So there's value. And I'm a realist here. Like, this stuff happens, but there's value on both sides here. Like, both sides of this equation are getting something out of this.
Yes. But none of it has to do with journalism.
Correct.
And none of it has to do with being a reporter. And so, I mean, can I go through my index of every conversation I've ever had with an agent and say for sure that nothing like that has come up? No, I couldn't say that for sure. But at the same time, I recognize that that is a gray area when it comes to a conversation that you're having with a source. Because it's not about them, it's about you. And you're giving them information that is, I mean, it seems like it's not something that ESPN would want her to talk about. And, you know, what ESPN wants is not necessarily the beginning of the end of your job as a journalist. But at the same time, you know, that is proprietary information when it comes to the chessboard at ESPN.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma is focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
Kavitha, I want to ask you, in the New York Times piece, an ESPN spokesperson declined to make Jimmy Pitaro available for an interview. What's Jimmy Pitaro's role here in terms of speaking out? And nobody is required to speak to the New York Times, but that's a strategic decision by the head of ESPN not to publicly sort of say something here or publicly sort of indicate, like, here's our plan for this. Here's what we think about this. That was, I don't want to say interesting. It's sort of such a boring word, but it's a strategic decision by Disney. I don't even know if it's ESPN at this point, Disney Public Relations, not to make the person who ultimately is responsible for this mess, in my opinion, that's your job is to figure out how to make these sort of talents work. A strategic decision not to talk publicly. I wonder how you saw that.
Yeah, it's certainly a choice. And, you know, you're right that Jimmy Pitaro isn't obligated to comment on this. But I think to me, it says a lot about either him or ESPN or Disney PR not knowing quite what to say or quite how to handle this, what the correct play here would be. I also think about kind of the juxtaposition of Jimmy Pitaro and John Skipper, his predecessor, who was rightfully lauded for years for being a champion of women and Black women and people of color on camera and at ESPN. And it's interesting, you know, Jimmy doesn't have that same reputation. And it's interesting that he wouldn't want to come out and kind of affirm himself as that champion or as that ally, or at least just to clean up a little bit of this mess that, like you said, he's responsible for as the person at the top. So, I think that this just kind of the decision not to comment on this screams of not having any idea what the right play is or what, you know, what would assuage all the sides here instead of, you know, really just what would be the right thing to do or say.
Can I just add to that?
Yeah, before go ahead,
ESPN management had a year to try to figure out how to manage this situation, and they did not do it up to the point of the end of Maria Taylor's contract in the middle of the NBA finals. I mean, this is a situation that, you know, much like Naomi Osaka not wanting to address the media at Roland Garros earlier this year, this is a situation that should have been caught much earlier and a solution found and a negotiation made to make sure that all parties were comfortable so that when the crucial moment arrives, it doesn't all blow up. And that is exactly what's happened. And I think it's interesting that this is going to look bad for both Rachel Nichols, as we've seen. It's not going to do Maria Taylor any favors in future contract negotiations, even though I think the public is much on her side. But who isn't going to look bad in this? I mean, ESPN management, it's a faceless entity. Those guys are still going to be able to get their tee times at their golf courses. They're still going to be able to get the reservations at the restaurant. They're still going to be able to make their mortgages. The people who are the decision makers are going to face no real consequences going forward.
Listen, you've made a great point. I mean, the consequences they'll face are just bad optics. But here's the reality of this. How catastrophically bad have you handled the situation where you had a year to sort of figure something out and it ends up on the front page of the New York Times website? Like, that is just so, that is such horrific management where you allow the situation to start to fester. Like, letting talent, like, I mean, I am as pro talent as it gets, you know, probably to my detriment, because I think you see where a lot of management leaks go. But how do you, at a certain point, like, your job is to like sit people down in a room, right? And like, just say like, we're going to make this work. Let's iron out all our differences here in this room. So it's on the top of the ESPN's management, the Jimmy Pitaro, you know, Norby Williamson level. It's on the NBA coordinating producer level. And then it's on everybody who sort of is part of this bleep show, to be very honest, to like sort of let it get to where like this story gets to, you know, the most influential newspaper arguably in the world. And there's probably an interesting debate that all three of us could have as to whether, like, you know, is it a story? Is it, you know what I'm trying to say? You know, is it a tabloid story? But the fact that it got there is I can't say it's mind boggling, because a lot of times ESPN is very reactive, as you guys know, as opposed to proactive. So there's a couple more things I want to hit on before we finish this up. Kavitha, one of the things that I think is a big takeaway for me, and I read this paragraph and I just, like, it didn't surprise me, but man, it just hit. The only person known to be punished was Kayla Johnson, a digital video producer who told ESPN Human Resources that she had sent the video to Taylor. Johnson, who is Black, was suspended for 2 weeks without pay and later was given less desirable tasks at work. She no longer works at ESPN. I'm reading that from the New York Times website. The only person at the moment in all of this to be disciplined, this sort of hits on what Jane is talking about, is a digital video producer, right? Out of all these characters we're talking about, sort of at the bottom of the food chain, probably makes the least amount of money, who, you know, it seems to me was sort of doing a solid for someone she either was a friend of or respected, Maria Taylor. She's the one who gets suspended for 2 weeks without pay. As you know, the history of ESPN in terms of suspensions, what a joke. And now is out of ESPN. So the collateral damage, like, Who got the most collateral damage here? Like, the person with the least power. Incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because here we have a young up and coming Black woman working at this company who was caught in the crossfire, essentially. And, you know, I think that the larger point here is all of the ways in which, you know, she wasn't fired outright, like you said, and like you read from the New York Times report, she was suspended for 2 weeks. And then, you know, they cut into her duties and her day-to-day job. And it just speaks to all of the ways that women and people of color are slowly forced out of this industry. And it's the thousand cuts kind of thing. And the fact that nobody above this woman's level has been disciplined for this complete mismanagement is extremely striking. And, you know, to your earlier point, you know, Rachel Nichols started the jump with her apology, by basically saying, you know, the number one rule in journalism is not to make yourself the story, not to become the story. And absolutely, Rachel is part of the story here, but ESPN has made itself this story as well. And, you know, to your earlier point, nobody at the top there has taken any responsibility for that.
Yeah, Jane made that point. So, Jane, I want to ask you, and Kavitha, please follow up on Jane after she responds. What do you think happens now with Maria Taylor? Or maybe if you were, I don't even know, Jane, if you, maybe you are friends with Maria Taylor or know Maria Taylor, but, you know, there's now a decision to be made here for her. Her contract is coming up very, very quickly. This story has now just blown up publicly where so many people beyond sports are aware of it. Her, how do I sort of be diplomatic here? Like her salary was reported on, and obviously I don't know how that sourcing was, but like I can take a pretty good guess, having covered these guys for a long time, that who knows salaries? Well, ESPN management knows salaries, the talent office knows salaries, and Maria Taylor's reps know salaries. My sense is Maria Taylor's reps are not leaking what her salary is. So, you know, there was a clear, basically, there was a clear intent to try to make Maria Taylor look greedy and like just be happy with, you know, this TK millions of dollars. These are all lottery ticket jobs. All these people are dealing in realities that most of us don't deal with, but that's, you're worth what they pay you. You're worth what, you know, you're worth what you can get at a place that pays like a Stephen A. Smith $8, $9 million. So Jane, what do you do if you're Maria Taylor? Cause it seems to me you have two options. One, you could stay and try to get as much money as you can there and be a good soldier, knowing full well there are people at that organization who absolutely do not have your back, do not have your best interests at heart, but you're making a shitload of money. Or you walk. You walk out of a job which you really probably liked and events that you love to cover, and you go to a new place. And while that new place may be great, it's a whole new life. It's a whole new change. The irony is there's not really a good option here, but she has to ultimately make a choice soon.
Yeah, if I try to put myself in Maria Taylor's shoes, I'm so mad I can barely speak. You know, that would be my initial reaction. First, because, you know, that story was leaked to the Post 2 days before the New York Times story was going to run. And the headline on it was like Taylor asked for Stephen A. Smith money or something like that, painting her as a diva. And then also, and this is what is so pernicious, devaluing her and saying, well, but ESPN's not going to pay that. And the top offer on the table now is 1 to 2 million or something like that. So it's a smear in that story, in addition to being like a, you know, a disclosure of what the behind the scenes of the contract are. And just to, so to me, that is so damaging. That is so damaging to Maria Taylor. And also it's a case in point. It does not matter how hard you work. It is, does not matter how talented you are. Your career can be affected by things completely outside of your control and in the most unfair way. Like Maria Taylor is a generational talent. The way that she, the chemistry that she has with people that she's speaking to, her, you know, the knowledge that she brings to the table, the experience that she has as a former athlete, like all of these things, and how telegenic she is. She is a generational talent. And here she is in the crosshairs of a situation that she had nothing to do with and has nothing to do with her talent. So just that being said is the start of this conversation. But outside of ESPN, you will never make as much money. The profile will not be as high. There simply is not, there is not another platform right now.
If you love sports and certain events, you can't cover the events at a different place. You can't cover the National College Football Championship elsewhere. Nobody else has it.
Right. And if you end up going to like a CBS to cover the NCAA tournament or something, then that's kind of it. You're doing that in college games, doing that college games in the US Open, whatever it is that, you know, the particular roundup of different sporting events is for a particular network. But none of them have the round the clock coverage, the access, the platform that ESPN does, and the money. Let's be honest. Nobody else does. So you either have to figure out you're going to go back to ESPN, you know, go back into the, what, the snake pit, Mendelsohn said, which is, you know, probably one of the most accurate things said right on that tape. Go back into the snake pit and try to, you know, spend another, you know, 3 to 4 years, you know, breaking that money in to your bank account, but also having to fight for your job every single day. Or you go somewhere else and, you know, you do something that you value more. You know, maybe you do some, you know, for example, you know, I am not making the same amount of money that I made at ESPN, but I love what I do. And I think you could probably talk to a bunch of people. I find a lot more value in what I'm doing now than what I did at ESPN. And I think, you know, you talk to Jamel or you talk to Michael or you talk to Carrie, and you will find them that they say something very similar, that, you know, the minute you walk out the door, your peace of mind returns. The chaos that's going on, wondering who is about to stab you in the back, you know, what management thinks of you, whether or not somebody's going to, you know, drop a story in the Post about what you make, that goes away the day you leave. And, you know, and it's a moment of clarity for a lot of people at ESPN, but at the same time, you will never have the same platform. You'll never make the same money. I think for somebody Maria's age, I'd take the money and stay at ESPN. That's what I would do. And I would realize that your life is going to be difficult every single day while you're there.
Kavitha?
Yeah. I identify so much with what James said, because I mean, both of us have navigated life after ESPN, right? And it's, you know, and I love working at The Athletic, but you know, we obviously don't have all of the media rights to all of the sports is the first thing. And you're never going to make as much money as you can at ESPN, and the access and the platform and all of that is obvious. Another thing that I think we need to point out from this New York Post story that I think we all agree was probably a very strategic leak was that it was also framed as not just how much money she makes or what the offer on the table was, but it was also framed as at a time when ESPN is cost cutting because of the pandemic, or, you know, at a time when Disney is putting pressure on ESPN to manage its costs and asking other high level talent to take pay cuts. You know, it was very much framed as this, you know, who does she think she is kind of thing. And that's so hard to read. And that's, I can't imagine how hard that is to read about yourself. And this question of what she does next, it very much reminds me of, you know, people who go into high level finance jobs, who hate their job, but make enough money before they turn 30, that then they can do whatever they want with the rest of their life. Right. I think if I'm Maria, like Jane said, I take the money for the short term, recognizing that, you know, people that I work with don't have my back, and that the company that I work for is going to employ these kinds of strategies if it needs to, because it's a company. There's no such thing as a company having loyalty to you, unfortunately. But at the same time, people like Jamel and Carrie and Michael have presented a framework for what life after ESPN could look like. And if you've made enough money that you're comfortable not making that kind of money in the future, but you know, your peace of mind and your daily happiness is important to you above all else, then there is a path that people have set. There's a precedent for what that could look like, and for being you know, just as respected and just as involved in the industry as you were at ESPN. So, I mean, I don't really know what I do if I'm Maria, other than, you know, like Jane said, given her age, taking the money and then figuring out in a couple of years where I actually want to be.
One thing that was, and both of you guys, I appreciate that perspective. I think we're all in agreement, basically. I will say that ESPN, like, it is true, they are asking talents for sure to take pay cuts. I mean, you know, Kenny Mayne told me that 61%. I know that they've asked at least one NFL person, well-known person, to take a pay cut. So that part is true. But Kavitha and Jane, and like, here's the reality that you guys know. That's true. At the same time, all of these companies, when they want to pay someone or when they want to acquire certain talents, there is always money. And I will guarantee that high-level executives at ESPN haven't volunteered to cut their pension or cut their Disney preferred stock. You know what I'm saying? So it's in all of these companies, there's always choices. And ultimately, if there is a salary course correction, well, that is a decision made by someone. And that decision
like is still targeted and specific to certain talent, and other talent will not be asked to take pay cuts and they will continue to hire. So like what I've always said is like, again, if a company like that wants you, they will pay you sort of whatever it takes to get you. If a company like that wants certain rights, they just pay the NFL billions of dollars. Like they'll get it. All this money's sort of fungible and you can sort of, you know, put it into the silo. And then really quickly, as far as Mary Taylor, I'm with you guys on this. I think I would try to rake them for as much cash as I could. And I would sort of go to work every day, being a good teammate, sort of, you know, and it, like sort of in person. But in the back of my mind, I would always sort of basically think that nobody in management really has my back here. And so I would just do my job to the best of my abilities with the larger sort of thought that, like, ultimately, I have no invested, you know, I'm not invested in this place beyond just being a worker. And then I would have my agents or I think in Maria's case as a manager, looking elsewhere in the next 2 to 3 years for the next step. I don't think I could ever, if I'm Maria Taylor in particular, I don't think I could ever trust ESPN management again. I'll just be honest. Like no. I would take their money for sure, but I could never truly trust them. That's sort of how I look at it.
And the other thing, Richard, is the story in the New York Post said that they were going to offer her between $1 to $2 million a year, I believe. She's worth a hell of a lot more than that.
Yeah, I'd be very honest with you. I don't know. Like, I'm the first to admit, I don't know what her current contract is, and I don't know what she has honestly been offered. I just know that, again, the talent office has a lot of discretion, and there's always money to be had. Sorry, Jane, I didn't want to.
No, that's just what I wanted to say. And the other thing I wanted to say is, if she weren't a Black woman in this industry, but she, you know, I don't think there would be a question as to her worth. I think she would be getting, that this wouldn't be the story that it is. I always wonder whether or not race and identity are going to make it feel like she doesn't deserve as much as she actually deserves. And so I'm always on guard about that.
You're worth what they'll pay you. Like, you know, like some people will say, like, I'm not worth what the Athletic's paying me. You're probably right. Like, I don't know. Or some people will say you're underpaid. Hey, you're probably right. I am. I mean, like,
you have to realize
it's all subjective though. It's subjective based on either the company or the person evaluating what the salary is.
The country seem to believe in free market principles until it comes to paying talent or players.
Right. Well, but right. I also think, Richard, you have to take into effect that Black women and women of color have particularly been devalued in the marketplace.
I agree. 1,000%.
If you look at the way people have been paid traditionally, you're going to, you know, oh, well, she doesn't have a family. He has a family, so we have to pay more. We are still dealing with the tendrils of those inequities.
And
I think it particularly comes into play when you have a young woman like Maria Taylor, who is a Black woman in this industry. She is going to be fighting against not only the upper management, her colleagues for a place at ESPN, she's also going to be fighting against all of those traditional ideas about what a Black woman is worth. And so I just want to point out, she's worth a hell of a lot more than $1 to $2 million. And I hope ESPN pays her.
Yeah, and that's why it was that's why it was also so pernicious. I know that Adam Mendelsohn doesn't actually have any power when it comes to contract negotiations from the management side of ESPN, but that's why, you know, some of his comments to Rachel in that tape were so pernicious. Just the dismissiveness of him, you know, having to deal with Me Too and Black Lives Matter. The idea that this is an inconvenience instead of something that systemically we need to correct, both in this industry and in this country. And both of those movements can speak to how people, women and Black women like Maria Taylor, have been devalued. So, you know, I think that it's just really, it's really unfortunate, but it's also not, like, we shouldn't be surprised that this is the conversation we're having, because this is just where we are.
Yeah. And again, I think, though, here's what I would say from my experience. And again, my experience as a white male in this business, it means absolutely nothing to this conversation. It just, quite frankly, does. The only thing perspective I can add is, in most of my jobs, when I've had to sort of negotiate salary, if that's even the right word, I have benefited from the person on the other side being someone who sort of vouched for me or vetted for me. Usually that person was in the circumstances of negotiating, a white male. For instance, when I took the job in Canada, I had
at the time, the co-host of my show, the host of my show, Bob McCown, is most famous sports broadcaster in Canada. He was the one who told management to, like, you know, I want this guy, get this guy, pay him what we have to pay him. Like, those are the kind of things that, like, you know, that the Adam Mendelsons of the world sort of know that that's the reality of the situation. And if you have, you know, somebody in management who has the power to pay you, like, this is where I'm talking about, Jane, like, all those dollar figures are bullshit, because, like, ultimately someone can make the decision to go over a budget. You know, someone can make the decision to pay you X. And if, quite frankly, if Jimmy Pitaro decided that Maria Taylor was worth $10 million, she would get $10 million. There is no such thing as cost cutting in that situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all, or it's maybe arbitrary is not the right word, but it's all subjective. It's all ultimately decided by human beings. Kavitha, let's end with this. If you were ESPN management, and God help you if you are, because, you know,
they could use her.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying, I don't know if Kavitha wants to summer in Connecticut all the time on the beach. She's always strikes me as a New York City type. So, like, what do you think could be done here to do your best over the next 2 to 3 years to within the NBA circles to make this work? Like, even someone who writes about this, like me, like, I don't know what the perfect solution is. Like, you're going to split NBA Countdown again? Like, who's going to get the studio hosting job? Like, how is there, do you see a way out of this to, like, at least calm the waters here and to maybe get to a better place with all these talents?
I mean, even before this entire controversy, ESPN put itself in a difficult position by splitting Countdown and The Jump, yeah. Right? So yeah. So that in itself is a problem that they do have to reconcile. I think first and foremost, I throw all of the money at Maria Taylor, frankly. you should believe that she deserves the dollar figure, whatever it is that she's requesting, because she does. But at a very baseline level, I pay to try and make this problem go away. I think over the next couple of years, though, there needs to be, you know, there just needs to be a much deeper commitment to supporting the Maria Taylors at ESPN and to making, you know, because I don't think we have this conversation. I don't think Rachel Nichols necessarily feels the way that she does if this doesn't seem isolated or strategic to a moment in time when a commitment to diversity was good business. And so to have that happen over the course of a couple of years with more than one person of Maria Taylor's talent level, I think is really important to at least presenting the image that you are actually committed to these things that you say you're committed to, and that you are learning from mistakes that lead to a situation like what we have now.
Jane, I'll ask you the same question. And, you know, I think you sort of hit on this too in one of these other topics, that, like, you know, for as good as ESPN has been about giving women opportunity and women of color opportunity, they're also still in many ways, don't you think, trapped in the paradigm of woman moderator and then two males on the left and right debating X. I remember talking to you, like, how long it seemed to take for a woman to be multiple women to be panelists on the Sports Reporters. Like, it's, you know, again, like, in many ways, they are at the forefront of this and doing well, particularly, let's say, their women's sports coverage. But then in other ways, they still have a ways to go on all this stuff.
I think,
as we all do. I'm by the way, I'm not dismissing The Athletic or SI or Sportsnet or any place I've worked at as well. Just go. I'm sorry, Jane.
Well, some do better than others. And I think a lot of it has to do with the financial pressures that certain companies are under. I remember in the late 1990s, you know, every newspaper in this country had a diversity initiative,
right,
where they were trying to hire people. And then when the money went and they had no hires and they had no room to do anything, all of a sudden that initiative went out the window. It was a luxury that no one was willing to actually pay for when it came time to put their money where their mouth was. And I think what's happened here is, yes, I think that ESPN has a real issue because it doesn't know what to do with talented women generally who don't fit that host or sideline reporter mold. And, you know, I think, look at Sarah Spain and Katie Nolan. Both of those women could have their own shows by now. They are that kind of talent. And instead they've been reduced, you know, Sarah for 10 years to kind of, you know, adjacent role on other shows. And, you know, that's just my opinion. I don't know if everybody, you know, agrees with me on that or not, but I do think, you know, neither of those women really want to be a host. They're not exactly a traditional analyst. They're certainly somebody who you know, is entertaining. You know, they're entertaining and they're knowledgeable about sports. I think they've done a good job making, you know, Mina Kimes an analyst. Justina Anderson was the first woman to have that NFL analyst position, and she was dealt very roughly with, I think. And you know, could still be in that role. She breaks news on Twitter all the time. It's amazing that, you know, that she wasn't valued more, I think, as well. So I think it is this idea across the board of incorporating women and not just using them, you know, like in some ways, you know, I was part of the first all female sports reporters and the first all female First Take and all of those things, which were celebratory about the roles that women could play at the company, but were one-offs. And, you know, and when you make it a one-off where, you know, you have your Black talent sit behind a desk and talk about their own experience growing up or people that they knew or painful experiences that they've had. And then, you know, don't follow that up by giving people real power behind the scenes as well. These problems are just going to crop up again and again. So I, you know, I don't know if it prompts self, I don't know that there's a financial incentive for real, true self, self-discovery and self-reflection at the company level. They make a lot of money. Basically positioning their programming to white men. So until they're forced to change that, I don't know that I would expect it.
Kavitha, I'm happy to give you the last word here.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that Jane said. And I think that, I mean, the issue of the limited roles, the types of limited roles that women tend to get in sports media and at ESPN is something that I've written about a lot. The idea that especially women of color are facilitating conversations instead of participating in them is still problematic. And they're just, there is room for all of us. There is room for a Mina and room for a Katie and room for a Maria and for a Sarah. And again, just to, you know, kind of bring it full circle into what we started this conversation talking about, the idea that two women have to be pitted against each other at a company the size of ESPN with all of the opportunities that exist there is really what this comes down to. And it's unfortunate. And I think, like Jane, I'm a little bit cynical as to whether there is really incentive to fix this problem from, you know, a systemic and institutional level, because at the end of the day, ESPN kind of operates as a monopoly and will continue to make money and will continue to have access to all of the sports.
Kavitha Davidson is a sports and culture writer for The Athletic and the host of the Culture Calculus podcast. Jane McManus is the director of the Marist Center for Sports Communication and a Deadspin sports columnist. You can follow both of their work. Certainly Kavitha's on The Athletic. Follow Jane on Twitter for her announcements on what she's doing at Marist, at Deadspin, and her other musings, probably about house hunting and England, whatever she's talking about at the time. All right, yeah, I'm going to keep you guys on as I do this incredible close. You know, usually I just say goodbye to my guests, but what a treat for you two to hear a mediocre talent like myself finish this show. Once again, thank you as always to Patrick Antonetti for producing this podcast. Thanks to the audience for listening to this. I know the quality of the sound isn't great, but it'll be better next week. If you like these kind of conversations, and both Jane and Kavitha have been guests on this podcast before, and they will be again, head to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch archive page, wherever you listen to this, on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. Leave us a nice note and a 5-star review. That's how this podcast continues. The podcast before this was Mike Golic, speaking of ESPN talents, who left. He was very, very honest about leaving ESPN, why it happened, his dealings with management. I really appreciate his time. I'm not sure he's ever gone that deep with anybody else. Before that, Michael Kay and John Wertheim both had books out that you should check out. Before that, Jamel Hill, who was mentioned in this podcast, and Tom Hannafin, better known as Tom Phillips, who was a longtime WWE broadcaster. All right, so that gives you a sense at least of the last couple podcasts that we've done. Thanks to everybody, Cadence 13, for supporting this. Thanks again to Patrick Antonetti, and thanks to you, the audience, for listening to this. Obviously, none of this happens without you guys, and we'll see you soon once again on the Sports Media Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.